I'll have what she's having.
Welcome to episode one of Our Better Half, a podcast about sex over 50. I'm Laura Collins, Lister Mensch. And fair warning, gentlefolk, I am the last person who should be hosting a podcast about sex. I have no qualifications. In fact, if you see the diagram describing how babies are made that I drew for my brother when I was 7, you will see that I have been leading people astray on the topic for a long time. I've been married for over 20 years to the same guy. I'm a known prude, and I've never been to a sex shop. I only just found out that I am a sapiosexual. The truth is, I read Our Bodies, Ourselves when I was 16, haven't picked it up again. I've been busy traveling the world, raising 2 kids. Now they're grown, and the world has changed, and I'm behind. I'm curious about what I missed while I was in the sleep-deprived era of parenting. But why this and why now? Well, for one thing, I'm pissed off. I'm annoyed that people over 50, I'm 54, are largely considered sexless by the media. Intimacy and sexuality are considered only for the young. I'm alarmed that STDs are on the rise in the elderly and that nursing homes consider their residents neither in need nor deserving of sexual intimacy. And I'm befuddled that the reaction to the topic of sex over 50 is
gross.
And really, I need a good laugh. There's a time of life when we're losing our parents and our kids are moving out, when arthritis and not birth control is the chief sexual concern, and I could use a little scandal, some giggles, a job description that doesn't make people check their phones for urgent messages. I didn't get the memo that others seem to have, that the second half of life is passion-free. I grew up believing that the pursuit of sexual satisfaction and intimacy were lifelong. I didn't think that old people in love were cute. I thought they were cool. As more and more of my peers confess that their sexual lives have dimmed or been extinguished, I thought we might need a little song and dance about the joy and life-giving qualities of our sexual selves, in pairs, or solo, or in groups. As a writer, my job is to go out and ask questions and report back. Well, it's a hoot asking people about sex. I have a lot to learn, and I look forward to sharing that with you. I have a feeling I'm not alone. In case you're wondering, this podcast is about sex, but it's going to be more silly than sexy. I'm just not into crude. It won't be clinical, but I'm calling on folks who have that end covered. And there are 2 things that you will not hear from me on this podcast. One is anti-aging, and the other is lose weight. It strikes me that 90% of what is being peddled to people over 50 are promises to make us younger or thinner, which leaves me free to explore the rest, which is vast and actually interesting, especially when it comes to sex. I'm learning about modern sex for classic bodies and also about podcasting, so bear with me. I will be depending on you, dear ones, to send me feedback and ideas. I want your stories and your introductions. If the topic of sex over 50 is a joke, let's at least be laughing with it together. This week, you'll meet a pornographer, a YouTube sensation, learn what vajazzling is, and review some of the oldest erotic literature. Let's get started. Picture a pornographer. It's probably not that savory an image. Chains, sideburns, leering grin, right? Well, you will never have that image again after today. I met my first pornographer, and he's a regular Joe. Literally. He writes an erotic book series called The Mr. and Mrs. Average Joe, published by Resplendence Publishing, and his partner in crime is his lovely wife. There's a picture of Stephen and Beth Fromm on the show notes, and they're adorable. Neither have sideburns. They're both over 50, and the characters in the series are too. They finish one another's sentences. They have interesting observations on erotica, on fantasy, and on sex in the second half of life. Before you meet them, though, here's an excerpt read by one of our listeners, chosen from a number of charming entries for the honor.
I couldn't stand it anymore, and I told him I wanted to play too. I tried joining them on the couch, but it was obvious right away that wouldn't work. It was time to move the party into our bedroom.
Welcome, Steve and Beth.
Nice to be here with you.
Should I really call you Joe and Elaine, the characters from your book?
Well, you kind of
can.
Yeah, we kind of see ourselves that way a little bit.
We call ourselves that.
Do you?
Yeah, Joan and Elaine have kind of become part of us.
That's sweet. They've been married 37 years.
We're at 38. So
they have two kids. You have two kids.
No. That's correct. Yeah, a lot of things. Yeah, our little pug, Sophie, she's the real character. The only actual character in the stories. But yeah, a lot of it, it's very biographical.
And they live in Wisconsin, as do you.
That's correct.
They shave their pubic areas. You?
Yes.
I had to ask. What did you dream of doing when you grew up?
I didn't really have a great dream. I just wanted to meet the right guy and be happy for the rest of my life. That's about it. And I did that. So I guess that's pretty good.
You got your dream.
I always wanted to be a writer, but it didn't actually happen. I didn't start writing Mr. and Mrs. Average Joe until I actually turned 50. It was almost 9 years ago. And I did it the month I turned 50, but that's something I always wanted to do. I was good at it in school. In high school, I wrote for the school paper. After high school, I met Beth. We got married, got to work, had a family. And before you know it, the years just go by. And it wasn't until the nest was empty and I turned 50 that I started writing again. At the time, it was just a hobby.
Absolutely. Your publisher has a rating system for how steamy a book is. And yours is at the highest level, Fire Opal.
Fire Opal, yes.
Wow. Why did you wait so long to publish?
So I actually wrote the story as a surprise birthday gift for her. Just a sexy little, I think it was a 7 or 8 page fantasy. I wasn't sure how she was even going to like it. She liked it. And I started collecting them. And I had just hundreds of pages, maybe 20 or 30 stories, little short scenarios. Not really connected. Each one was a little vacation story or birthday story, holiday.
Well, they also started out helping me because, you know, when you get older, it's harder to get in the mood to have sex. As time goes on, you try to think of new things to help you to get in the mood. And porn works somewhat and toys, but this really helped. So he kept going.
3 years ago, something called 50 Shades of Grey happened.
Yes, it did.
The market exploded then. And at the time, Kindles were new, ebook, and that's a much more private way to publish erotica rather than have it on a paperback that you have to hide from your kids. You can put it on your Kindle. It has, you know, passwords. One day, actually, I was sitting in a waiting room waiting for Beth was getting a mammogram, and I picked up a Time magazine and I started reading an article about 50 Shades of Grey. They are outselling all of the other books combined. The market was just exploding. So we thought, well, you know, we have a pretty good story. Why don't we try to publish this? We sold it to a publisher and here we are.
You have grown kids and grandkids. How was the conversation about that?
Well,
you know, our youngest one isn't too bad about it. She's not married and she's an English teacher and she really helped Steve in the actually getting it published. The other one, the oldest one, you'd think she'd understand, but God, no. We don't get to see the grandkids very much or them, and the books are why we're not allowed to talk about the books.
Yeah, they're a bit embarrassed. We like to use the analogy, if you're familiar with the Meet the Parents, Meet the Fockers movies.
Mm-hmm.
We're the Fockers. Okay. Okay. That's
how about other relatives and friends?
Everybody else
is okay.
Yeah, most are pretty supportive.
And we have a ton of friends who are apparently swingers.
Yeah, that we found out after the fact.
I've read all four books. Full disclosure, you kindly sent them to me. Very steamy stuff.
Good.
What I want to ask you about is the fact that your characters are all over 50. Was that difficult to sell?
Yeah, actually it was. That was kind of the whole purpose about it. Our second book is called Nothing Gray, About 50. And I used that when I was trying to market these books to publishers. I used that line and I said, you know, I believe there's a market for this. Fortunately, I was lucky. I was able to find a publisher that was able to take us.
I want to ask you about the book covers. They're very hot, very passionate, but they also look like young people. Was there a conversation about that?
We tried our best on that. And the artist I work with, basically, I just give him an idea. I mentioned the first cover, the red kimono is a key part of that scene when they first see Mika in her red kimono. I mentioned that and that cover came out and we just went, oh, that's good. It's a good cover. It's a steamy cover. Age thing is...
I don't think you could ever get old people on the cover. I just don't think they would do it.
What we're talking about on this podcast is older people and sexuality. The idea that it would be taboo, even in erotica, to portray older people, even, you know, just mature in their 50s or young 60s. That's an interesting question to me.
The covers, we were pretty happy with the way they came up. But yeah, the age thing is, you know, and once the action starts, we mention age a lot in the stories. We mention grandchildren. Turning 50 is a big part of that second book. That's pretty much what it's about. The age part in the stories we use, like the men have a conversation about Viagra and needing it and things like that. So those are the things we try to keep as realistic as we can.
I was actually watching for that, you know, looking for what was the difference between people over 50 in these stories and what could just as easily be younger people. And I did notice, of course, grandchildren, reading glasses.
Yes.
Yeah. And then one of the characters, her hands get tired mm-hmm. if she does too much drumming.
Yes.
Are you writing for an older audience or are you writing about older people or is that an important part of this for you?
I don't want to put us in a certain category because younger people are liking the stories too. I get a lot of the reviews are, boy, I hope it's great. It's great when I'm that age. We do want them to be age realistic.
These books are our fantasies, too. Mm-hmm. And so absolutely everything we think about is for older people because we are older. I'm 57 and he's 58. If other people like it, it's great. We hope some other people do, and we hope older people do too, but it's not really aimed at older people. Right?
No, not so much. I love reviews. I've gotten some reviews where it says it's really nice to read a story about characters my age that I can actually relate to. Other ones have said it's nice to see one that's not about, you know, most of them are about their 20s and 30s. And like wine, you just get better with experience and age. So people are relating to it. And especially older women are really, they're really loving the stories.
That kind of brings it back to the 50 Shades issue. One of the reasons I got interested in this topic was seeing that older women were very interested
yes.
in this type of erotic content and fantasy, but the characters in the book were young.
Yeah.
Are you hearing from other authors that are interested in that market?
Not really too much. I have a lot of author friends and some that are my age or older. And they do write, there's some May-December type romances and things like that. But for the most part, I think they keep the characters younger. And we just don't see that many books. And when I was trying to publish these, I did an extensive search of publishers and I was looking at, and I saw some that said like Silver Years, but they were more like, you know, cougar stories, older women, younger men. That was a challenge to do this, but I'm still not seeing that many books with people our age.
Well, we haven't read it.
No, we haven't. I haven't really found
and we
any.
Do like erotica.
We do read a lot of erotica.
We read it to each other. That's yeah. One of our ways of getting in the mood.
Yeah, and it's we have this thing where if it's a male point of view, I'll read it. If it's a female point of view, she'll read it. And otherwise, flip a coin.
That's nice. Yeah. Dr. Ruth actually writes about that. Writing erotica together can be good foreplay. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Most definitely.
Yes, yes, yeah.
So your characters are two couples that are intimately involved with one another.
Yes.
The narrator, Joe, married to Elaine, and their partner couple, John and Mika. And they're all sleeping together. So are they swingers or is this about the four of them?
It's really about the four of them, although every book has... They are swingers, yes.
Because they've done it with other people.
Yes, every book has at least one encounter with Joe and Elaine have with somebody else other than John and Mika. So,
how about Steve and Beth? Are you swingers?
No.
The funny thing about that, every person that we knew that read the book, people knew us personally, yes. said, oh, we did not know you were swingers.
Didn't know you were into
and
that.
We said, well, what made you think that we were?
I'm a better writer than I thought because you're... So basically,
were you insulted not be thought? Or?
Not at all. In fact, we have some really good friends who are, and we knew they were, and they were actually the first people we let read the book before we published it.
And what was their response?
They liked it.
Did they find it realistic to the lifestyle?
Yeah, I think they did. But I will say there are some things in the story that I believe it's Nothing Gray. We mentioned Joe and Elaine get asked to be part of a friend's wedding. They get hit on by a couple at this wedding. And that's an actual true story.
So you're putting out a vibe.
Well, I guess so. And then we have some friends, too, after the book's published, said, hey, we've been in the lifestyle for a while. If there's anything you need to know, let it, you know, give us a call. So, but no, there is a Joanie Lane. There is not a John and Mika.
Ah,
they're fictional.
If you were swingers, which couple would you want to be with?
Oh, we would love to really know John and Mika.
Ah, the topics in the book are pretty racy. You've got swinging, bondage, S&M, drugs, a lot of alcohol.
A lot of alcohol, yeah. They like wine.
And so do your kids need to give you the talk about these issues?
No, I don't think so. No.
I also I have to note, safe sex. Couples and the encounters that they have with other people, there isn't really a discussion too much about safe sex. Can you talk about that?
You know, it's all fantasy. So we do, I mean, when they first meet John and Mika, they have a discussion about it. You know, but we learned both of the men had vasectomies, so there's no danger of anything like that happening. But
so, yeah, we don't talk about STDs. That wouldn't be fun to talk about.
It kind of takes, you know, it kind of takes the spontaneity off. Out of the story.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably why we are swingers.
Yeah, that could be. Okay. So again, that part is all fantasy. That part's all fantasy.
We always tell people, it's nothing is off the table. You never know what we do. We aren't now, but you never know. I never say never.
Yeah, so one of the things that I'm most proud of about the books is the conversations. These characters are open and honest about everything with each other. There's really nothing they can't talk about. So that's fun, and I think that's important. Communication is important. That's how we create the stories. And, you know, we know too many people our age who, you know, when it comes to sex, they can't communicate. They don't communicate. And hopefully if this helps, you know, in any way, just to get people to talk, it's great. That's what we're here for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Elaine and Mika in the books, they obviously enjoy one another a great deal. That's a big focus. Are Joe and John going to get together?
Oh, that's we're in discussion about that.
That's
I think yes, because, you know, it's only fair play. But Steve
well, working that into the story is
being the one that has to write it and imagine it himself is a little difficult. And it's funny.
Why is
so
that
why
too?
Why can't you know... it go the other way? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a tough one, and that's something we are really working on getting that somehow into the story.
Interesting, cool. That's cool. Considering that this is about very adventurous sex and non-monogamy, there's still a lot of boundaries on what these characters want to do. A lot of negotiation and discussion about it.
That's how we are. We communicate. You know, we will. You know, if we want to try something new or get a new toy or something, you know, we'll talk about it before it happens or doesn't happen. And we can picture being with this other couple and having those conversations.
Mm-hmm. What's next for the series and for your writing in general?
Ah, well, we're working on the fifth book now. It's about the two women writing a book together. It's been a lot of Joe and Elaine showing John and Mika their native Wisconsin and things. Well, John and Mika are from California, and so they're going to be taking Joe and Elaine there in the next book and showing them San Francisco, Napa Valley. We're looking forward to that.
Does that mean that Steve and Beth will be having a fun trip out to California?
We wish.
We wish.
We'd love to.
We clean houses for a living. Mm-hmm. We're not wealthy at all. And we barely make it selling these books. So this is just the most fun thing we've ever done. We don't make a whole lot off of it. We can't really travel places.
I've got to imagine, and you've mentioned it in this conversation, that publishing these books has had an effect on your own sex life and on your view of the world of erotica. Do you have any advice for others?
Yes. Try things. Communicate. Just talk to each other. Share your fantasies. What I want to tell people is share your fantasy. Talk to each other.
Fantasies are really important.
Yes. I mean, that's communication is the key thing in any relationship. Talk about it. And don't be afraid to try things. It doesn't mean be with other people or anything, but...
You can pretend you're with other people, for Pete's sake. I mean, it's easy to do anything.
Yes.
It's amazing what you do it outside once. Or just do something different. Do something, step outside the box and know that you can still have sex even better than you did when you were young. I mean, we've had sex all our lives, obviously, and it just is gets, I don't know how it gets better, but it certainly does. Try it.
Well, that is the absolute perfect way to close. And I want to thank you both, Beth and Steve, for this interview. And you can check out the show notes for more information about the books and about the author. And I thank you both very, very much.
Thank you, Laura. Thanks for having us.
I have a very funny friend who we will call Alberta Knish for reasons only known to us too. She's in charge of bringing very old sex back to us from the ages.
I've been through the mill of love. Oh, love.
I want to introduce Alberta Knish, who is our better half's senior correspondent for Ancient Erotica. What do you have for us today?
Thank you, Laura. I thought we would start with some of the oldest erotica in Western civilization. We're going to start with Sappho. Sappho was a Greek poet, and she lived, as is often the case, it's not clear when she was born. She was born sometime between 630 and 612 BC. Mm. She died sometime in the 580s BC, but she was one of the most famous poets of her time. She wrote in a very Greek traditional form called lyricist, and it was meant to be accompanied with a lyra, and it's actually kind of hard to translate into modern English. But some translations have been made. The interesting thing about Sappho, we get our words sapphic and lesbian actually from her. She was born on the island of Lesbos, and she writes romantic poetry about her relationships with women.
Cool.
So here is an excerpt from one of her poems. I have not had one word from her. Frankly, I wish I were dead. When she left, she wept a great deal. She said to me, "This parting must be endured, Sappho. I go unwillingly." I said, "Go and be happy. But remember, you know well, whom you shall leave shackled by love. If you forget me, think of our gifts to Aphrodite and all that loveliness that we shared, all the violet tiaras, braided rosebuds, dill and crocus twined around your young neck."
I really, really, really want a violet tiara.
I know. Is that not the most romantic thing? One of the interesting things that this points to is that for the ancient Greeks, homosexual behavior was part of normal sexual expression. As a matter of fact, Homer has a section in the Odyssey where Odysseus is talking about the virgins being shipped to Crete for the Minotaur. He said the translation is something like, well, you know, girls will be girls on a long ship voyage.
Which is just a wonderful phrase, unless I keep in mind that they're going to the Minotaur.
I know. But this is what's interesting. I think people are probably aware of the male homosexuality, you know, the mentor and younger man relationship that was common in Sparta, but that it was understood as part of women's sexuality. Being married was for children. Having fun was very often homosexual encounters.
That's really interesting. Okay, so we'll put a link to a website about her and her poetry in the show notes. Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, it's time for a break. A Kegel break. Ladies, you remember what a Kegel exercise is. You were taught to do this to squeeze your pelvic floor muscles after pregnancy. But guess what? Kegels are not just for pregnancy, not just for ladies. Want to keep from wetting yourself when you sneeze? You want to prevent UTIs, have better orgasms, stronger erections? But let's not just talk about it. Let's take a Kegel break right now. Here's a sound effect to help you visualize it as we contract our pelvic floor muscles and release. Ready? All together.
Just don't understand. I welcome you to our Explain That to a Grandma segment. Our guests today are Katie and Grandma Debbie. Katie has a question.
Hi, Grandma Debbie.
Hello, Katie.
I'm really interested in the advice of somebody who's a little bit older and maybe has some different ideas about the whole lady spacing, you know? Do you know what I'm referring to when I...
I'm not sure that I do. You probably need to explain it.
Well, the lady space, the bits, you know, the vagina and all the parts about it.
Oh, the bits. Yes. Gotcha.
Yes.
We appreciate the technical term.
And so do you know what a vagical is?
You know, I really don't. Are you talking about getting like a little piercing?
Oh, no. Vagical is actually, it's kind of like a facial for the bits.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I didn't even know you could have that.
So, Grandma Debbie, you hadn't heard of that?
No, that's completely new to me. A facial, yes. A vagical, no.
You know, a lot of people, they're all about getting the facial because that's the first thing others sees. But in other instances, the vagical is kind of similar when, you know, you have a friend and that's the first thing they see. So it's important that it's looking right, right?
Yes. I would think it would also be important that it feels like you're at your best. So if that makes you feel like you're putting your best foot forward, then that would help in every situation with confidence and with relaxation and with everything else.
So I'm thinking I'm going to get what's called a Hollywood bikini wax.
Is that where they do the hot wax thing on the bits?
It's everything from front to back and in between, all of it.
Part of me thinks that the term hot wax and bit probably shouldn't be said in the same sentence because... But I know what that is. So that's what you're thinking about doing for your vagical, huh?
It's the Hollywood bikini wax. And so it's a little different. You might have heard of, like, say, the Brazilian bikini wax where they leave some of the carpet and, you know, then you can adorn that with little bejazzling.
Oh, I see. Yes. Yes, I know the difference. I see the difference.
If you do the Hollywood bikini wax, you can do what's called the tooing, and that's like a temporary tattoo on the bits, and it could be anything from like a star to a heart or, you know, a big piranha mouth, you know.
Keep going. I'm loving this. Keep going.
That's one of the options. And then, you know, if you do, say, the other kind where you leave a little bit of the carpet, then you could do some bejazzling. And that's where, you know, they put, like, crystals or glitter, other decorations in you know, kind of like little baby hairs on your head, you know, like baby barrettes. And, you know, I'm sure you could probably put some spikes or something fun there. So, yeah, I guess I'm wondering, what would you do?
You know, I like the idea of the sparkly as opposed to complete decarpeting and the temporary tattoos, because I'm not sure how other people would react to that. And I think that the other person's reaction is also important. The one complete is a little extreme, but the other one is playful. What do you call it?
Bedazzling. Kind of like a bedazzle, you know, like those ugly jean jackets from the 80s when you put those little bedazzled thingies on it. You just do that.
Okay.
With JJ.
I think that has a really good opportunity for individualization. Is a lot more comfortable because growing out is not fun after you've had it completely shaved.
I think the ride would be uncomfortable.
You think the what would be uncomfortable?
The ride. You know, if you got jewels and stuff down in your bits and you're having a visit, could get a little uncomfortable.
It would depend on the size of the bling, wouldn't it?
You just said bling, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Well, I'm all about big bling. Yeah, I don't do the little weenie bling.
Are you leaning more toward the other one then?
Well, you know, I was really liking the piranha tattoo.
I do too.
I mean, I think it makes a statement, right?
It totally makes a statement. It makes an enormous statement.
Well, ladies, I'm very grateful to you both for this. Any parting advice from Grandma Debbie to Katie on these vital decisions?
I am just thankful that I've learned this, that I have not gone through my life without knowing this. I would love to know what it's like, what the whole experience is like.
And whether you feel as relaxed afterwards as you do after a facial.
Well, okay. I invite anyone listening to this podcast who has experienced vajazzling, facials, and vatooing, and or a Hollywood bikini wax to write in and let us know about your personal experience. I know I want to know. Grandma Debbie wants to know. You'll need to report back, Katie.
Yes, yes. Because it sounds like Grandma Debbie hasn't tried this yet. You know, maybe we need to go together.
Yeah, maybe like a spa day.
There you go.
All right. Spa day, ladies. Thank you very, very much. Just don't understand. Have you ever imagined what it would be like to write a song that delighted people? That your music video would get 11 million views and, I don't know, Anderson Cooper would feature it on his show? While we're dreaming, let's make it a song that charmingly celebrates older women and aging bodies. Okay, not happening to me, probably not to you, but I want to introduce you to someone that it did happen to. Listen to a bit of the song, but if you end up yodeling for the rest of the day, you were warned, it's really catchy. Here is Donna Lou Stevens, Older Ladies.
Well, I ain't 16, not a beauty queen, and my eyes are bagging and my skin is sagging, and if that's the reason that you don't love me, then maybe that's not love. Well, I ain't 20 either, and I don't care neither, and my hair is gray, and I like it that way, and if that's the reason that you don't love me, then maybe that's not love. If you don't think I rock, well, we ain't gonna roam. If you don't think I hung, my heart just turned cold.
I want to introduce Donna Lou Stevens, a singer, songwriter, and YouTube sensation.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Laura.
Good morning. Donna Lou, what was your dream of what you were going to do when you grew up?
I knew at the age of 3, people asked me, what are you going to be? And I said, I'm going to be an actress. So I knew it from day one. My first role was I played the high school principal in our first grade play. And from then on, that's exactly what I did with my life.
Perfect. Well, you've done that. How long have you been a musician?
Well, it's interesting. I was made fun of a lot when I was younger. So I was terrified of singing, although I loved to sing. And in fact, I remember standing in a kitchen with my roommate in Taos, New Mexico, probably in 1987. And she said, what scares you most in the world? And I said, singing in front of people.
Wow.
It was maybe a year after that, they were having auditions for The Wizard of Oz in Taos, and I wanted to be in it so badly. And that was my first singing role. I was cast as the Tin Man.
The Tin Man.
And then my second singing role was in Austin, Texas, and I got cast as the Madam in Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. And they asked me, you know, do you have musical experience? And I'm like, oh, yeah. And I had just done that one musical. And I remember on opening night, I thought I was going to have a heart attack. My heart was beating so hard. You know, when we come up against all that childhood, you know, what we were told, all that insecurity, you know, it was a really scary thing.
But you pushed through that.
So I had this idea to do a country vaudeville a cappella group.
Hmm.
And I hadn't seen it done. And so I was just thinking, well, it came into fruition and it was very successful. But that's when I learned I was a songwriter. I had diddled before that and had sung, but I didn't have very much confidence in my voice. But by this time I had a little more, especially with funny stuff. And I started writing these funny songs and people were just like, you know, rolling in the aisles with it. And I'm like, wow, I guess I'm a songwriter. So then the two came together. I was in a meditation in Eugene, Oregon. And I'm a meditator.
Mm-hmm.
And after this meditation retreat, so extensive, I got in my car and I had been receiving these really beautiful songs, but I was really afraid of singing them.
Mm-hmm.
And It was so clear. Like, I don't have a lot of voices that speak clearly. But this time it was like, Donna Louise, you need to make an album. I hadn't recorded any of my songs yet. You need to make it, and you need to record it with your friend Jimmy George in Austin, Texas. And I didn't have any money. I'm like, well, okay, because it was so clear. And then the voice said, and you need to get out of the way and let these songs be sung.
How many songs have you published so far?
I have a CD plus about 4 singles. No, maybe more than that. With the music videos, I guess I have about 7 singles.
Tell us about the inspiration to write your song Older Ladies, which I have purchased and listened to endless times and just adore.
So my friend called me and she was lamenting because she had asked her husband, honey, do you wish my body looked like it did 10 years ago? Well, I mean, what a silly question, right? Mm. And he was silly in his answer and he said yes. So she was lamenting over that. And that was kind of the inspiration for, you know, our writing the song, which is about our aging bodies and I'm going to be okay with it whether you are or not. I think that's why it went viral.
Well, let's talk about that. 11 million views.
I know. Crazy.
Yeah. The Today Show, Fox News, Anderson Cooper. How does it feel to have Anderson Cooper play your song and say he loves it?
That was the most exciting, you know, to have it be that big. I'm like, oh my goodness. Wow. That's crazy.
Well, it's a very charming song. It's catchy as heck. Very fun. It's also really excellent music. But one of the things I wanted to ask you about is Cooper notes that it's also about aging and self-confidence.
Exactly.
Does the song strike a chord on that level too for people, you believe?
Oh, absolutely. Important part of it. Well, in the beginning when I wrote it, it was baby, that's not love. But then as I sat with it, I like, wow, that feels like a little bit of blame or pointing the finger at someone. And that's not what I wanted. The goal of my music is to make people feel good and to be as universal as possible, to reach everyone, alienate no one. So by that shift of a consonant, I went from baby, that's not love, to maybe that's not love. So it was more of an inquiry, and it didn't point a finger at men because we're just as much to blame for our lack of self-confidence as they are. Yeah. No one's at fault. And that's what I wanted to bring about. And so in the crafting of the song, I think the combination of the humor, the delight that we all had in making the video, it was charmed. It was so much fun. Mm-hmm. The message about being okay, the sassiness of it.
It's very sassy. Yes.
It's very sassy. And the confidence, like you said, all of these factors just came together. And the whole process of making the video was like divine, you know, just divinely guided. Everything was so in the flow. I know everybody knows what that feels like. So the combination of that just it made it pop.
Yes, absolutely. This podcast is about sex and sexuality and what I'm calling the second half of life.
Awesome.
What is your advice to older ladies and fellows on that sense of ourself?
You know what? I'm going to get really truthful and vulnerable. Mm. When I am going, as I'm going through menopause, you know, everything is changing around my body. Mm-hmm. And my body is not as open or receptive. It doesn't function like it did in the sexual arena younger in my life. And my partner and I have, you know, I know that's a problem for so many people, but we're committed not to making that a problem. It has pressed us into finding other ways to connect, be as intimate without moving away from each other, but using it to move toward each other for a different and deeper conversation. Mm-hmm. And that has made our connection so much richer. And as a man, you know, he said, I never dreamed that this would be possible for me to be even more enriched by the intimate connection than I ever was with straight sexuality.
Yes.
So if I were to have advice, I mean, I know a lot of women don't experience that at all. Mm-hmm. But for the women that do, you know, a lot of times I think our strategy is avoidance. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm just going to avoid my husband. I'm going to avoid my partner. avoid sexuality or avoid dating altogether, rather than saying, this is what I got. How can we work together as a team to fulfill and make a win-win for both of us and not stop thinking outside the box until we get there?
That's beautiful and very inspiring.
So I would say take the pressure, you know, take the pressure off your body, off yourself, and use it as an opportunity to embrace the wisdom that can come from aging.
That is a really important message. So I'm sure you made $1 million on your YouTube video and you've retired and you're calling in from Tahiti, right?
Oh, gosh, I wish that was true. It's really quite amazing. Mm-hmm. Overall, I would say I made about $10,000, mm-hmm. you know, which is so surprising, which is great. It covered the cost of the video and some other stuff. But you would think with 10 million views, you know, it's just like, wow, that's pretty amazing. Because you know what I'd do if I had that money? I would just make more and more and more and more feel-good videos. That's the goal.
Well, you have some others, which I'm going to point people to. But tell us what's next for you.
Right now, I just put out this funny little Christmas video called Mary and Okay. It's a takeoff on a Mary Kay beauty ad, but it's inner beauty products. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a hoot. It's out there right now.
Also very sassy.
Yeah, very sassy. And then I've got another one coming out probably in January, and it's called Age-Related ADD.
Perfect.
And it's about going a little easy on ourselves when we start to get forgetful. And I make a distinction, you know, there's a fine line between what's forgetful and then moving into more serious issues. I am here or not, can't recall what I thought a moment ago. I'm standing at the kitchen door. What did I come in here for? I don't know.
And I'm looking forward to that one. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast, for the song, for your work. And I'm wishing you well in your future endeavors.
Thank you so much, Laura. It was lovely talking to you. Blessings to everyone.
What are we, ladies? We're divine.
And now for something a little more serious. What happens when a well-loved, well-admired, charismatic actor is accused of sexual assault? Well, if it's a porn actor, apparently, it takes under a week for the industry to dissociate itself, collectively and resoundingly. Now, I know none of you gentlefolk out there know anything about pornography. Those of you who do know who James Dean is, you may pretend you don't, and hide your blushes now. You don't need to know his work. But what you do need to know is that James Dean is known for his boyish charm, feminist attitude, and mainstream female fan base, and that he was recently, at the end of November, accused of rape and sexual assault by some former girlfriends and co-stars. Bill Cosby, you will remember, was accused by dozens and dozens of women of rape and sexual assault over decades. Neither man has been tried legally. Cosby and Dean have both denied the accusations, but the pornography industry and community, in a collective act of moral outrage, immediately and resoundingly stood behind the women. Dean's business relationships, sponsorships, newspaper columns were severed within days, and within a week, Dean's reputation and career became his to defend, and the hashtag Solidarity with Stoyle went, as they say, viral. Why, we have to ask ourselves, is the moral compass on sexual consent and believing women better in the sex film industry than in larger society? Give it some thought. Who is upgrading to sex over 50 this week? Omar Gurri Martinez, an Argentine racing driver. Gillian McCain, a Canadian poet. Kita Kachidoki, he's a sumo wrestler. Lee Won Jong, a South Korean actor. Richard James Rick Wilson, Australian politician. The drummer Kate Schellenbach, who is a former member of the former Beastie Boys. Jonathan Jackson, the son of Reverend Jesse Jackson. U.S. country singer Deanna Carter. The Malaysian game show host Adrian Pong. And Paul Kenneth Keller, a serial arsonist from Everett, Washington, is this week now able to have hot sex over 50, but he's serving 107 years in prison right now. He'll be eligible for a parole in 2079. Eligible now for sex over 60, Linda Barry, the cartoonist. Nels Klein, guitarist for the band Wilco. Iron Chef Shen Kenichi, the Szechuan sage, who will be doing it, I presume, in the kitchen. And Mel Gibson, movie actor, but fewer envious sighs from that. No longer doing 69, now having sex over 70, the Hawaiian surfer Fred Hemmings, Roberto Rivellino, the Brazilian soccer player and prominent mustache wearer, Lebanese politician Adnan Mansour, Diane Keaton, John Paul Jones, Led Zeppelin's musician who co-wrote Stairway to Heaven, turning 80, James Senegal, co-founder of Costco, he will be doing so in bulk, Italian philosopher Gianni Vattimo, and having sex over 90, Sir George Henry Martin, the Beatles producer, and Japanese fashion designer Hanai Mori. Enjoy! Everybody sing the birthday song. Happy, happy. It's never too late in life for sex, but it is time to close up shop for this podcast for this week. Next time, you'll meet a professional wanker, learn about a bilingual online community celebrating life over 50, and learn about the sex toys of whalers' wives. Have you had an orgasm today? Not yet? Old people, go have a nice orgasm now. Go on. See you next week.
I've always had a very keen interest in my own private parts since I was a young boy, shall we say. And it has certainly been a hobby, but who'd have thought that I could turn this hobby into a profession?
Hey, this is Dan Savage from the Savage Lovecast and Savage Love, and you're listening to a Swing Set podcast at Swing Set FM.